Climate change isn't real.
Where are the glaciers? We should be able to see them by now. Are you sure the coordinates are correct? They should be right here. Why can't we see them? They're gone. That's impossible. Our last expedition was 9 months ago. The scientists said we had years. They said we had years to turn this around. They were wrong. 4 months have passed since our expedition returned, since we carried horrible news home. 4 months full of asking how we will go on, what we can do, if we can do something, anything. The world around us is burning, both figuratively and literally. Wildfires are everywhere, destroying everything in their reach. Whole countries are submerging under rising sea levels. Plastic fills our oceans, our food, us, surrounding us, infesting us. Just 4 months ago, suit-clad politicians with stuffy faces and strange hairstyles told us climate change was a hoax. It wasn't real. They claimed that it was something made up to suppress us in some fucked up way. 4 months ago, we were told that this was fine. We'll turn it around. We won't let it go too far. 4 months since we believed we had time. We didn't. There are predictions about how long the existence of humans on Earth will be possible. They don't look very promising. The temperature increases. Heat waves set fire to dry wood, eradicating forests and everything that lives in them. Strong storms carry the fires far. Huge amounts of carbon dioxide that we carelessly pump into the atmosphere turn our oceans acidic. The sea's heating up. A few months ago, people spoke about staying under the average temperature increase of 2 degrees Celsius. We've surpassed that limit long ago. Now fish and marine life are dying. Coral reefs don't exist anymore. Rain is scarce, but when it does come, it's extreme and intense. Floods, created by severe rainfalls, hurricanes, tsunamis, wash away fruitful layers of soil, leaving land infertile. Climate refugees flee their homes, moving to higher altitudes. If they have enough money to do so. If they don't, they starve or die of dehydration or drown in the floods. But there must be something we can do to turn this round, to save our planet, and to save us, right? Right? Don't lose hope, they say. A lot of us pin our hope on the life that prevails around us. Do everything for those who can't do anything for themselves. Try to right what we have wronged. Try to make up for the destruction and the hunger and the pain we've brought. Save the animals who we've taken this planet, their home, from. Biologists, years ago, when the numbers started to go down, when the habitat started to slowly disappear, shipped all remaining polar bears to track their movement, their hunting habits, and their population. All newborns received chips, too. Global warming is melting the ice they live on, slowly at first, rapidly now, decreasing their population at an alarming rate. Without food and without anywhere to live, the population count has fallen to one. There's only one single polar bear left living in the wild. But this is not the end. What had been the Fridays for Future movement months ago has transformed into a worldwide protest group of people who refuse to give up, who believe we won't be able to return to how the Earth once was, but trust that if we work together, we can stop the deterioration of our planet. Our last polar bear has become an image of hope, giving her her name. A rescue operation set sail 13 days ago. On board are multiple vets, biologists, activists. Our ship has zero emissions. We filled water, transported food in mason jars and wraps made out of beeswax. Before the sun will set on us today, we will reach the stone landscape which once lay under masses of ice and snow. Our ship fights its way through extreme winds and cuts through walls of plastic. We take with us what we can. We get tangled in old fishing nets. When we pull them off the bow and onto the deck, we wish we hadn't. We find fish carcasses, starved to death, rotting remnants of what seems to once have been an octopus, ripped apart, smelling of decay and death. Deformed turtles who swam into garbage disposed carelessly into the ocean, oblivious to the tortures they, small enough to get tangled in rubbish, would go through growing up. On our way, we passed floating whales and dolphins, whose waters had heated up too quickly for them to flee into colder regions. Terns and puffins who had eaten plastic-infested fish, dying after sharp fragments had cut up their insides or blocked up their intestines, slowly killing them, leaving them to wonder why they were in so much pain. Our purpose is to find hope and take her with us, to bring her to a safe place, a sanctuary, to keep her safe and healthy, to create a chance for her to live, and in the best case scenario, repopulate. We drop the anchor when we reach our destination. Only a few months ago, we would have been wearing snowsuits and thermal underwear. Now jeans and a light wind jacket suffice. We each carry our backpacks with our provisions and equipment, medical cases, tracking devices, compasses, GPS, a big collapsible stretcher in which we will carry hope, once carefully sedated, back to our ship and to safety. Barely anybody talks. We silently follow Kome as the leader group away from the ship and into the uncertain. The tracker located Hope a few miles east from us. What is worrying is that she had been in the same area for the last 7 days. Polar bears hunt every 2 to 6 days, which means that either A, the last time she ate Hope at a huge feast, which is unlikely as barely any prey lives here anymore, or B, something is wrong. After 2 hours of walking, we stop for a food break, even though nobody really seems that hungry. We try to keep in a good mood, but it's obvious we're all anxious. Even Mani, who usually is lively and talkative, has quieted down and barely said anything since we left the ship. Fear and worry hangs over us like a thick woolen blanket, suffocating, making it hard to breathe. Only Praveen's quiet chatter can be heard as they fill in our viewers. Our mission is being live-streamed worldwide on a climate protection blog. The majority of our audience is very supportive, cheering us along the way, and sending messages of reassurance and encouragement. But others? Others not so much. There are people who will say, we're not doing this for the environment, not at all, that we're doing this for 50 minutes of fame or for money, claiming that the donations to our movement go right into our pockets. There are also still those politicians saying that we're lying, saying that we're faking the live stream using green screens and Photoshop. They are still saying climate change isn't real. It's fake. We're fine. We're not. All of us stop dead in our tracks when we see her. We've seen polar bears in wild nature before. They were much bigger than I had imagined them, regal and powerful, strong and mighty and beautiful. The small creature in front of us looks nothing like I remember. Frail, bones visible through patchy fur. Hope lies on her side, vulnerable and weak. With none of her once so extraordinary strength left, she looks hopeless. As if she has given up. I don't know what we expected. Of course she wouldn't be in a good condition. But seeing her like this shocks all of us. Don't get any closer. You'll startle her. Nobody's thinking about moving anyways. We don't know what to do. Yes, we had this big plan all worked out of finding her and bringing her somewhere safe. But now we're all struggling to remember it. We hold our breath as Imani points the metallic blowpipe at Hope. The syringe on the inside holds a tranquilizer powerful enough to put the polar bear under for hours. I can see Imani's hand shivering, struggling to aim. It is vital that this works on the first try. If Hope panics, we risk her getting injured, and she's already in a bad enough condition as it is. Come on, you've got this. Imani straightens up and their chest expands, breathing in deeply, placing the blowpipe to their lips. A split second later, the syringe is embedded in Hope's neck. She doesn't move. This is strange, I think. I hadn't expected for the tranquilizer to work instantly. But surely that's a good thing. She looks so calm. A little triumphant smile creeps onto my face. We did it. Shit. I whip my head to my left, to where the silence had been broken, and I'm met with faces of horror, the complete opposite of what my face is showing. Turn off the camera, Praveen, now. Why? I don't understand. Now, Praveen. They are just as confused as I am, mouth agape, eyebrows furrowed, but doing what they've been told. Has something gone wrong? Did it work? I asked, directed at no one in particular. Nobody answers. Instead, Imani pushes the silver pipe towards me, not waiting for me to grab, before letting go and beginning to walk to where Hope lies motionless on the ground. My stomach sinks, and suddenly I feel both freezing cold and way too hot. Panic erupts in me. What are you doing? Turn around! Imani must be out of their mind. Hope is weak and ill, but she's still a polar bear. If something has gone wrong with the narcotic, and they get too close to her, she could kill them. They don't stop. Their feet carry them quickly and determinedly away from us. I look for help or maybe for an explanation, and the faces around me, not sure of myself which one I'm hoping for. Some are covering their mouths with their hands. Some only stand there watching. For a moment, I think I can even see tears in some of their eyes. When I focus on Imani again, they have reached Hope and are lowering down to a crouch next to her. Hope still isn't moving. Did the sedative work? Does she not see us as a threat? Or does she understand we're here to help her? Imani moves one unsteady hand up to her neck, burying it in her matted fur where her jugular vein is. We wait. 1 second. 2 seconds. 3 seconds. It feels like a lifetime. She's dead. Our children will never experience the beauty we had the privilege to see. the beauty we thought ourselves entitled to destroy. They will never see all the cities and countries that now lie sunk in the ocean, Egypt and India and the Netherlands and New Orleans and Ethiopia. They will never swim in the ocean without being surrounded by plastic bags and bottles and death. Never be in awe of the beauty of coral reefs. They will never see tigers or snow leopards or orangutans other than in old recordings of nature documentaries. They will never have the chance to see rhinos, gorillas, turtles, giraffes, elephants. And they will never see a wild polar bear. But that's okay. All of this is completely fine because Donald J. Trump knows this is not a climate crisis.
Oh well, that's kind of depressing.
It is, isn't it?
But it doesn't have to go that way. This doesn't have to be our end.
It probably will go this way if we don't change our behavior.
I think the current COVID-19 crisis has made us all aware that it is important to pursue a more conscious lifestyle in many aspects, including environmental change. Nearly all of us saw the news reports on how CO2 emissions rapidly went down as soon as the first lockdown measurements were put into place. This was just one of many things that made it obvious that humans are in fact what keeps the environment from thriving. Not having our usual freedom made many of us appreciate nature and being able to go outside much more as well. Although the pandemic had some horrible consequences, it helped people to get a better understanding of the importance of caring for our environment in order to sustain nature.
But what about the people in power? Can change really happen when world leaders like Trump are claiming climate change is a hoax?
A lot of people in our generation have come to the realization that we can't wait for the world leaders to make up their minds about this. We simply don't have the time. We have to take our future into our own hands and push for change rather than beg for it. Over the past year, we have seen student-led initiatives such as Fridays for Future taking over the news. Younger generations are starting to be fed up with false promises and not being taken serious. This can be seen not only on the fight for environmental change, but also the fight for human rights, such as the recent Black Lives Matter protests. Young adults are starting to see how flawed the old system is and are finally fighting back. If we continue to be as passionate and outspoken about the wrongdoings in today's world as we currently are, I am confident that governments will have no other choice but to listen and to change. You listen to a podcast by Jule Wolters and Luisa von Urach, recorded and produced in June 2020.